Imagine a consistent theory of everything that ignores consciousness. A recording device cannot play the role of an observer, because who will read what is written on this recording device? In order for us to see that something happens, and say to one another that something happens, you need to have a universe, you need to have a recording device, and you need to have us. In the absence of observers, our universe is dead. According to Linde's philosophy, dinosaur fossils don't really exist until you look at them. But when you do look at them, they spring into existence as if they had existed millions of years ago. Physicists who hold to this point of view are careful to point out that this picture is experimentally consistent with a world in which dinosaur fossils really are millions of years old. Some people, who dislike introducing consciousness into physics, claim that a camera can make an observation of an electron, hence wave functions can collapse without resorting to conscious beings. But then, who is to say if the camera exists? Another camera is necessary to observe the first camera and collapse its wave function. Then a second camera is necessary to observe the first camera, and a third camera to observe the second camera ad infinitum. So, introducing cameras does not answer the question of how wave functions collapse. Decoherence. A way to partially resolve some of these thorny philosophical questions, one gaining popularity among physicists, is called decoherence. It was first formulated by German physicist Dieter Zey in 1970. He noted that in the real world, you cannot separate the cat from the environment. The cat is in constant contact with the molecules of air, the box, and even cosmic rays that pass through the experiment. These interactions, no matter how small, radically affect the wave function. If the wave function is disturbed to the slightest degree, then the wave function suddenly splits into two distinct wave functions of the dead cat or the live cat, which no longer interact. Zey showed that a collision with a single air molecule was enough to collapse it, forcing the permanent separation of the dead cat and live cat wave functions, which can no longer communicate with each other. In other words, even before you open the box, the cat has been in contact with air molecules and hence is already dead or alive. Zey made the key observation that had been overlooked. For the cat to be both dead and alive, the wave function of the dead cat and the wave function of the live cat must be vibrating in almost exact synchronization, a state called coherence. But experimentally, this is almost impossible. Creating coherent objects vibrating in unison in the laboratory is extraordinarily difficult. In practice, it is difficult to get more than a handful of atoms to vibrate coherently because of interference from the outside world. In the real world, objects interact with the environment, and the slightest interaction with the outside world can disturb the two wave functions, and then they start to decohere, that is, fall out of synchronization and separate. Once the two wave functions are no longer vibrating in phase with each other, Zey showed, the two wave functions no longer interact with each other. Many worlds. At first, decoherence sounds very satisfying, since the wave function now collapses not via consciousness, but by random interactions with the outside world. But this still doesn't solve the fundamental question that bothered Einstein. How does nature choose which state to collapse into? When an air molecule hits the cat, who or what determines the final state of the cat? On this question, decoherence theory simply states that the two wave functions separate and no longer interact, but it does not answer the original question, is the cat dead or alive? In other words, decoherence makes consciousness unnecessary in quantum mechanics, but it does not resolve the key question that disturbed Einstein. How does nature choose the final state of the cat? On this question, decoherence theory is silent. There is, however, a natural extension of decoherence that resolves this question that is gaining wide acceptance today among physicists. This second approach was pioneered by another of Wheeler's students, Hugh Everett III, who discussed the possibility that perhaps the cat can be both dead and alive at the same time, but in two different universes. When Everett's PhD thesis was finished in 1957, it was barely noticed. Over the years, however, interest in the many worlds interpretation began to grow. Today, it has unleashed a tidal wave of renewed interest in the paradoxes of the quantum theory. In this radically new interpretation, the cat is both dead and alive, because the universe has split into two. In one universe, the cat is dead. In another universe, the cat is alive. In fact, at each quantum juncture, the universe splits in half, in a never-ending sequence of splitting universes. All universes are possible in this scenario, each as real as the other. People living in each universe might vigorously protest that their universe is the real one and that all the others are imaginary or fake. These parallel universes are not ghost worlds with an ephemeral existence. Within each universe, we have the appearance of solid objects and concrete events as real and as objective as any. The advantage of this interpretation is that we can drop condition number three, the collapse of the wave function. Wave functions never collapse. They just continue to evolve, forever splitting into other wave functions in a never-ending tree with each branch representing an entire universe. The great advantage of the many worlds theory is that it is simpler than the Copenhagen interpretation. It requires no collapse of the wave function. The price we pay is that now we have universes that continually split into millions of branches. Some find it difficult to understand how to keep track of all these proliferating universes. However, the Schrödinger wave equation does this automatically. By simply tracing the evolution of the wave equation, one immediately finds all the numerous branches of the wave. If this interpretation is correct, then at this very instant your body coexists with the wave functions of dinosaurs engaged in mortal combat. Coexisting in the room you are in is the wave function of a world where the Germans won World War II, where aliens from outer space roam, where you were never born. The worlds of The Man in the High Castle and The Twilight Zone are among the universes existing in your living room. The catch is that we can no longer interact with them, since they have decohered from us. As Alan Guth has said, there is a universe where Elvis is still alive. Physicist Frank Wilczek has written, "We are haunted by the awareness that infinitely many slightly variant copies of ourselves are living out their parallel lives, and that every moment more duplicates spring into existence and take up our many alternative futures." He notes that the history of Greek civilization, and hence the Western world, might have been different had Helen of Troy not been such a captivating beauty, if instead she had an ugly wart on her nose. Well, warts can arise from mutations in single cells, often triggered by exposure to the ultraviolet rays of the sun. He goes on, "Conclusion, there are many, many worlds in which Helen of Troy did have a wart at the tip of her nose." I am reminded of the passage from Olaf Stapledon's classic work of science fiction, Star Maker. "Whenever a creature was faced with several possible courses of action, it took them all, thereby creating many distinct histories of the cosmos. Since in every evolutionary sequence of the cosmos there were many creatures, and each was constantly faced with many possible courses, and the combinations of all their courses were innumerable, an infinity of distinct universes exfoliated from every moment of every temporal sequence." The mind reels when we realize that, according to this interpretation of quantum mechanics, all possible worlds coexist with us. Although wormholes might be necessary to reach such alternate worlds, these quantum realities exist in the very same room that we live in. They coexist with us wherever we go. The key question is, if this is true, why don't we see these alternate universes filling up our living room? This is where decoherence comes in. Our wave function has decohered with these other worlds. That is, the waves are no longer in phase with each other. We are no longer in contact with them. This means that even the slightest contamination with the environment will prevent the various wave functions from interacting with each other. In Chapter 11, I mention a possible exception to this rule, in which intelligent beings may be able to travel between quantum realities. Does this seem too strange to be possible? Nobel laureate Steven Weinberg likens this multiple universe theory to radio. All around you, there are hundreds of different radio waves being broadcast from distant stations. At any given instant, your office or car or living room is full of these radio waves. However, if you turn on a radio, you can only listen to one frequency at a time. These other frequencies have decohered and are no longer in phase with each other. Each station has a different energy, a different frequency. As a result, your radio can only be tuned to one broadcast at a time. Likewise, in our universe, we are tuned into the frequency that corresponds to physical reality. But there are an infinite number of parallel realities coexisting with us in the same room, although we cannot tune into them. Although these worlds are very much alike, each has a different energy. And because each world consists of trillions upon trillions of atoms, this means that the energy difference can be quite large. Since the frequency of these waves is proportional to their energy, by Planck's law, this means that the waves of each world vibrate at different frequencies and cannot interact anymore. For all intents and purposes, the waves of these various worlds do not interact or influence each other. Surprisingly, scientists, by adopting this strange point of view, can re-derive all the results of the Copenhagen approach without ever having to collapse the wave function. In other words, experiments done with the Copenhagen interpretation, or the many worlds interpretation, will yield precisely the same experimental results. Bohr's collapse of the wave function is mathematically equivalent to contamination with the environment. In other words, Schrödinger's cat can be dead and alive at the same time if we can somehow isolate the cat from possible contamination from every atom or cosmic ray. Of course, this is practically impossible. Once the cat is in contact with a cosmic ray, the dead cat and live cat wave functions decohere, and it appears as if the wave function has collapsed. It from bit. With all this renewed interest in the measurement problem in the quantum theory, Wheeler has become science's grand old man of quantum physics, appearing at numerous conferences in his honor. He has even been hailed as a guru of sorts by New Age advocates who are fascinated by the question of consciousness in physics. However, he is not always pleased with such associations. Once, he was distressed to find himself on the same program with three parapsychologists. He quickly put out a statement that included the sentence, "Where there's smoke, there's smoke." After 70 years of contemplating the paradoxes of the quantum theory, Wheeler is the first one to admit that he does not have all the answers. He continues to always question his assumptions. When asked about the measurement problem in quantum mechanics, he says, "I am just driven crazy by that question. I confess that sometimes I do take 100% seriously the idea that the world is a figment of the imagination, and other times that the world does exist out there, independent of us. However, I subscribe wholeheartedly to those words of Leibniz. This world may be a phantasm, and existence may be merely a dream. but this dream or phantasm to me is real enough, if, using reason well, we are never deceived by it. Today, the many worlds decoherence theory is gaining popularity among physicists, but Wheeler is bothered that it requires too much excess baggage. He is toying with yet another explanation of the Schrödinger cat problem. He calls his theory it from bit. It's an unorthodox theory which starts with the assumption that information is at the root of all existence. When we look at the moon, a galaxy, or an atom, their essence, he claims, is in the information stored within them. But this information sprang into existence when the universe observed itself. He draws a circular diagram representing the history of the universe. At the beginning of the universe, it sprang into being because it was observed. This means that it, matter in the universe, sprang into existence when information, bit, of the universe, was observed. He calls this the participatory universe, the idea that the universe adapts to us in the same way that we adapt to the universe, that our very presence makes the universe possible. Since there is no universal consensus on the measurement problem in quantum mechanics, most physicists take a wait-and-see attitude toward it from bit. Quantum computing and teleportation. Such philosophical discussions may seem hopelessly impractical, devoid of any practical application in our world. Instead of debating how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, quantum physicists seem to be debating how many places an electron can be at the same time. However, these are not the idle musings of ivory tower academics. One day they may have the most practical application of all, to drive the economies of the world. One day the wealth of entire nations may depend on the subtleties of Schrödinger's cat. At that time, perhaps our computers will be computing in parallel universes. Almost all of our computer infrastructure today is based on silicon transistors. Moore's law, which states that computer power doubles every 18 months, is possible because of our ability to etch smaller and smaller transistors onto silicon chips via beams of ultraviolet radiation. Although Moore's law has revolutionized the technological landscape, it cannot continue forever. The most advanced Pentium chip has a layer 20 atoms across. Within 15 to 20 years, scientists may be calculating on layers perhaps 5 atoms across. At these incredibly small distances, we have to abandon Newtonian mechanics and adopt the quantum mechanics, where the Heisenberg uncertainty principle takes over. As a consequence, we no longer know precisely where the electron is. This means that short circuits will take place as electrons drift outside insulators and semiconductors instead of staying within them. In the future, we will reach the limits of etching on silicon wafers. The age of silicon will soon be coming to a close. Perhaps it will usher in the quantum era. Silicon Valley could become a rust belt. One day we may be forced to compute on atoms themselves, introducing a new architecture for computation. Computers today are based on the binary system. Every number is based on zeros and ones. Atoms, however, can have their spin pointed up, down, or sideways simultaneously. Computer bits, zeros and ones, could be replaced by qubits, anything between zero and one, making quantum computation much more powerful than ordinary computers. A quantum computer, for example, could shake the foundations of international security. Today, large banks, multinational corporations, and industrial nations code their secrets with complex computer algorithms. Many secret codes are based on factorizing huge numbers. It would take centuries, for example, for an ordinary computer to factorize a number containing 100 digits. But for a quantum computer, such calculations may be effortless. they could break the secret codes of the nations of the world. To see how a quantum computer would work, let's say that we align a series of atoms, with their spins pointing in one direction in a magnetic field. Then we shine a laser beam on them, so many of the spins flip as the laser beam reflects off the atoms. By measuring the reflected laser light, we have recorded a complex mathematical operation, the scattering of light off atoms. If we calculate this process using the quantum theory, following Feynman, we must add together all possible positions of the atoms spinning in all possible directions. Even a simple quantum calculation, which would take a fraction of a second, would be almost impossible to perform on a standard computer, no matter how much time is allotted. In principle, as David Deutsch of Oxford has stressed, this means that when we use quantum computers, we would have to sum over all possible parallel universes. Although we cannot directly make contact with these alternate universes, an atomic computer could calculate them using the spin states existing in parallel universes. While we are no longer coherent with the other universes in our living room, the atoms in a quantum computer are, by construction, vibrating coherently in unison. Although the potential of quantum computers is truly staggering, in practice, the problems are equally enormous. At present, the world record for the number of atoms used in a quantum computer is 7. At best, we can multiply 3 by 5 to get 15 on a quantum computer. Hardly impressive. For a quantum computer to be competitive with even an ordinary laptop, we would need hundreds, perhaps millions of atoms vibrating coherently. Because even the collision with a single air molecule could make the atoms decohere, one would have to have extraordinarily clean conditions to isolate the test atoms from the environment. To construct a quantum computer that would exceed the speed of modern computers would require thousands to millions of atoms, so quantum computing is still decades away. Quantum teleportation. There may ultimately be another practical application to physicists' seemingly pointless discussion of parallel quantum universes, quantum teleportation. The transporter used in Star Trek and other science fiction programs to transport people and equipment through space seems like a marvelous way to zip across vast distances. But as tantalizing as it seems, the idea of teleportation has stumped physicists because it seems to violate the uncertainty principle. By making a measurement on an atom, you disturb the state of the atom, and hence an exact copy cannot be made. But scientists found a loophole in this argument in 1993 through something called quantum entanglement. This is based on an old experiment proposed in 1935 by Einstein and his colleagues Boris Podolsky and Nathan Rosen, the so-called EPR paradox, to show how crazy the quantum theory really is. Let's say that there is an explosion, and two electrons fly apart in opposite directions, traveling at near light speed. Since electrons can spin like a top, assume that the spins are correlated. That is, if one electron has its spin axis pointing up, the other electron is spinning down, such that the total spin is 0. Before we make a measurement, however, we do not know which direction each electron is spinning. Now wait several years. By then, the two electrons are many light years apart. If we now make a measurement of the spin of one electron and find that its axis of spin points up, then we instantly know that the other electron is spinning down, and vice versa. In fact, the fact that the electron is found to be spinning up forces the other electron to spin down. This means that we now know something about an electron many light years away, instantly. Information, it seems, has traveled faster than the speed of light, in apparent violation of Einstein's special relativity. By subtle reasoning, Einstein could show that by making successive measurements on one pair, one could violate the uncertainty principle. More important, he showed that quantum mechanics is more bizarre than anyone had previously thought. Up to then, physicists believed the universe was local, that disturbances in one part of the universe only spread out locally from the source. Einstein showed that quantum mechanics is essentially non-local. Disturbances from one source can instantly affect distant parts of the universe. Einstein called it a spooky action at a distance, which he thought was absurd. Thus, thought Einstein, the quantum theory must be wrong. The critics of quantum mechanics could resolve the Einstein-Podolsky-Rosen paradox by assuming that, if our instruments were only sensitive enough, they could really determine which way the electrons were spinning. The apparent uncertainty in the spin and position of an electron was a fiction, due to the fact that our instruments were too crude. They introduced the concept called hidden variables, that is, there must be a hidden sub-quantum theory, in which there is no uncertainty at all, based on new variables called hidden variables. The stakes were raised enormously in 1964, when physicist John Bell put the EPR paradox and hidden variables to the acid test. He showed that if one performed the EPR experiment, there should be a numerical correlation between the spins of the two electrons, depending on which theory one used. If the hidden variable theory was correct, as the skeptics believed, then the spins should be correlated in one way. If quantum mechanics was correct, the spins should be correlated in another way. In other words, quantum mechanics, the foundation of all modern atomic physics, would rise and fall on the basis of a single experiment. But experiments have conclusively proved Einstein wrong. In the early 1980s, Alan Aspect and colleagues in France performed the EPR experiment with two detectors 13 meters apart, which measured the spins of photons emitted from calcium atoms. In 1997, the EPR experiment was performed with detectors separated by 11 kilometers. Each time, the quantum theory won. A certain form of knowledge does travel faster than light. Although Einstein was wrong on the EPR experiment, he was right on the larger question of faster-than-light communication. The EPR experiment, although it does allow you to know something instantly about the other side of the galaxy, does not allow you to send a message in this way. You cannot, for example, send Morse code. In fact, an EPR transmitter would send only random signals, since the spins you measure are random each time you measure them. The EPR experiment allows you to acquire information about the other side of the galaxy, but it does not allow you to transmit information that is useful, that is, not random. Bell liked to describe the effect by using the example of a mathematician called Bertelsmann. He had the strange habit of every day wearing a green sock on one foot and a blue sock on the other, in random order. If one day you notice that he is wearing a blue sock on his left foot, you know now, faster than light, that his other sock is green. But knowing that does not allow you to communicate information in this fashion. Revealing information is different from sending it. The EPR experiment does not mean that we can communicate information through telepathy, faster-than-light travel, or time travel. But it does mean that it is impossible to completely separate ourselves from the oneness of the universe. It forces us to hold a different picture of our universe. There is a cosmic entanglement between every atom of our body and atoms that are light-years distant. Since all matter came from a single explosion, the Big Bang, in some sense, the atoms of our body are linked with some atoms on the other side of the universe in some kind of cosmic quantum web. Entangled particles are somewhat like twins, still joined by an umbilical cord, their wave function, which can be light years across. What happens to one member automatically affects the other, and hence knowledge concerning one particle can instantly reveal knowledge about its pair. Entangled pairs act as if they were a single object, although they may be separated by a large distance. More precisely, since the wave functions of the particles in the Big Bang were once connected and coherent, their wave functions might still be partially connected billions of years after the Big Bang, so that disturbances in one part of the wave function can influence another distant part of the wave function. In 1993, scientists proposed using the concept of EPR entanglement to provide a mechanism for quantum teleportation. In 1997 and 1998, the scientists at Caltech, Aarhus University in Denmark, and the University of Wales made the first experimental demonstration of quantum teleportation when a single photon was teleported across a tabletop. Samuel Brownstein of the University of Wales, who was part of this team, has compared entangled pairs to lovers who know each other so well that they could answer for their lover even if separated by long distances. Quantum teleportation experiments require three objects, called A, B, and C. Let B and C be two twins that are entangled. Although B and C may be separated by a large distance, they are still entangled with each other. Now let B come in contact with A, which is the object to be teleported. B scans A, so the information contained in A is transferred to B. This information is then transferred automatically to the twin C. Thus, C becomes an exact replica of A. Progress in quantum teleportation is moving rapidly. In 2003, scientists at the University of Geneva in Switzerland were able to teleport photons a distance of 1.2 miles through fiber optic cable. Photons of light at 1.3 millimeter wavelength in one laboratory were teleported into photons of light of a different wavelength, 1.55 millimeters, in another laboratory connected by this long cable. Nicolas Gissin, a physicist on this project, has said, "Possibly larger objects like a molecule will be teleported in my lifetime, but really large objects are not teleportable using foreseeable technologies." Another significant breakthrough was made in 2004, when scientists at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, teleported not just a quantum of light, but an entire atom. They successfully entangled three beryllium atoms and were able to transfer the characteristics of one atom into another, a major accomplishment. The practical applications of quantum teleportation are potentially enormous. However, one should point out that there are several practical problems to quantum teleportation. First, the original object is destroyed in the process, so that you cannot make carbon copies of the object being teleported. Only one copy is possible. Second, you cannot teleport an object faster than light. Relativity still holds, even for quantum teleportation. To teleport object A into object C, you still need an intermediate object B connecting the two, so information transfer takes place slower than light. Third, perhaps the most important limitation on quantum teleportation is the same one facing quantum computing. The objects in question must be coherent. The slightest contamination with the environment will destroy quantum teleportation. But it is conceivable that within the 21st century, the first virus may be teleported. Teleporting a human being may pose other problems. Brownstein observes, "The key thing for now is the sheer amount of information involved. Even with the best communication channels we could conceive of at the moment, transferring all that info would take the age of the universe." Wave function of the universe. But perhaps the ultimate realization of the quantum theory may come when we apply quantum mechanics not just to individual photons, but to the entire universe. Stephen Hawking has quipped that whenever he hears the cat problem, he reaches for his gun. He has proposed his own solution to the problem, to have a wave function of the entire universe. If the entire universe is part of the wave function, then there is no necessity for an observer who must exist outside the universe. In the quantum theory, every particle is associated with a wave. The wave, in turn, tells you the probability of finding the particle at any point. However, the universe, when it was very young, was smaller than a subatomic particle. Therefore, perhaps the universe itself has a wave function. Since the electron can exist in many states at the same time, and since the universe was smaller than an electron, perhaps the universe also existed simultaneously in many states, described by a superwave function. This is a variation of the many-worlds theory. There is no need to invoke a cosmic observer that can observe the entire universe all at once. But Hawking's wave function is quite different from Schrödinger's wave function. In Schrödinger's wave function, at every point in space-time, there is a wave function. In Hawking's wave function, for every universe, there is a wave. Instead of Schrödinger's psi function describing all possible states of the electron, Hawking introduces a psi function that represents all possible states of the universe. In ordinary quantum mechanics, the electron exists in ordinary space. However, in the wave function of the universe, the wave function exists in superspace, the space of all possible universes, introduced by Wheeler. This master wave function, the mother of all wave functions, obeys not the Schrödinger equation, which only works for single electrons, but the Wheeler-DeWitt equation, which works for all possible universes. In the early 1990s, Hawking wrote that he was able to partially solve his wave function of the universe and show that the most likely universe was one with a vanishing cosmological constant. This paper provoked quite a bit of controversy because it depended on summing over all possible universes. Hawking performed this sum by including wormholes connecting our universe with all possible universes. Imagine an infinite sea of soap bubbles floating in air, all connected by thin filaments or wormholes, and then adding them all together. Ultimately, doubts were raised about Hawking's ambitious method. It was pointed out that the sum of all possible universes was a mathematically unreliable one, at least until we had a theory of everything to guide us. Until a theory of everything is constructed, critics have argued that one cannot really trust any of the calculations about time machines, wormholes, the instant of the Big Bang, and wave functions of the universe. Today, however, scores of physicists believe that we have finally found the theory of everything, although it is not yet in its final form, string theory, or M theory. Will it allow us to read the mind of God, as Einstein believed?
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook, so please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.